Tonight I want to start a new series of shiurim under the broad topic of being a Jew in the business world, trying to explore some of the issues that come up. Being a Jew not really in the business world, I'm going to need some help here from all of the Jews around the table and not around the table who are in the business world to help guide me with some of the issues. If there are certain issues that come up, broad issues or not such broad issues, specific issues, that maybe we can touch on. The first one, the first few shiurim, I think, will be, I think I can handle, starting with tonight's topic of business lunches, kosher style. That will probably take us at least 2 weeks to get through all of the situations and material about going for business lunches. And then after that, I was thinking about doing company kitchens and things like that, workplace kitchens. Maybe after the business lunches, we'll do the workplace kitchen and certain issues that come up in the workplace, in the kitchen, the microwave, the refrigerator, and things like that. So that'll be, in 3 or 4 weeks, depending on how long this takes us and whether we'll have shiur next week. I forgot to mention it, but we'll see. You can let me know afterwards, after the tape is shut off, whether we'll have a shiur next week if people are away or not. But I wanted to start tonight with the business lunches, because I think that is a common situation and challenge that we face. Being in the business world and therefore not necessarily being our own bosses or necessarily being able to set all of the parameters of everything that we want to do, sometimes puts us into circumstances and situations where they potentially could be challenging. And the question is, at what point is it a challenging situation? At what point is it a forbidden situation? Obviously, when there's a line, there is a line, not specifically regarding business lunches, but in general, obviously in the workplace or in any walk of life, as a rabbi also, there's always a line that can't be crossed where you're crossing from being a challenging situation to a forbidden situation where we try to stay away from. The question is, when we have these, and they're not, and they are pretty common, I'm sure there are plenty of them that we can all think of around the table, of situations that do come up, being a religious Jew, a committed Jew in the business world, that are challenges for us that we face. So one of them is the business lunch. Now, the business lunch, going out to a business lunch, and what I mean by that is, would be going out to a non-kosher restaurant, being taken out for a business meeting to a non-kosher restaurant, or having meeting a client or a potential client at a non-kosher restaurant. And the first question that needs to be dealt with is not what can you order and what foods can you, if any, eat in this non-kosher restaurant, but can you go in? Mm-hmm. Can you have such a meeting? The reason why not would be because of the issue of Maris Ayin. The issue of Maris Ayin, which means one of two things. There are two types of Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin means that somebody will see what I'm doing and either will A, think that I'm doing something wrong, or B, think that what I'm doing is okay and therefore come to do it themselves. So what do I mean? Let's take our example of going into a non-kosher restaurant. So somebody sees me with the yarmulke and a beard walking into a non-kosher restaurant, they'll think either that I'm going to eat treif, that I'm doing something wrong, or B, they'll think that place must be kosher if I'm going to eat there, and then they'll go in, follow me in, and eat there as well. So those are two separate issues, both under the umbrella of being called Maris Ayin. What's interesting about, hold that thought, what's interesting about Maris Ayin is that it's not such a modern concept, because I think the thought of many people and our mindset a lot of times is, who cares what other people think, right? That's what we're told. You do what you need to do, make sure what you're doing is okay, and don't worry about everybody else, right? Let them think what they want, but it doesn't matter, right? What's important is, are you doing something right or wrong? But clearly that's not the case when it comes to the halacha, And the clear, I think the most obvious, besides for the psukim that I'll get to in a minute, we find in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that there are different ksarim. There's the keser kahuna, or the crown of kahuna. There's the keser malchus, the crown of being a king. And the keser shem tov ola al kulana. But the crown of having a good name, meaning that other people see you as a good person doing good things, then that's ola al kulam, then that's the most important. So you see that people thinking, having a good impression of you, and view of you in their mind, is important, not only because of that Mishnah, because there's a Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'yisem nikiyim me'Hashem u'mi'Yisrael. The Pasuk says that you should be clean. You should be clean in the eyes of Hashem, and in the eyes of Yisrael. Which the Pasuk in Mishlei then says, U'matzachein v'seichal tov b'inei elokim v'adam, something that we incorporated into benching, that is incorporated into benching, v'nimtzachein v'seichal tov b'inei elokim v'adam, that we should find favor in the eyes of not only Elokim, but also b'adam, also in the eyes of man. Now the reason for the context that this is all brought up in the Mishnayos is in the Mishnah in Shkalim. The Mishnah in Shkalim discusses they used to collect the machzor shekel. Right? We're all familiar with the machzor shekel. They used to collect a half a shekel every year at the beginning of Adar, which is why we read Parshas Shkalim at the beginning of Adar. And they used to collect a half a shekel from every, let's say, Jewish adult. Right? Male, maybe females, also used to give, they used to give for children also sometimes. So every Jewish adult, and they used to collect that money, and they would put it into the Beis HaMikdash, and there was basically a room full of half shkalim in the Beis HaMikdash. Now every once in a while, there would be a person, or every once in a while, a person would go in there and take money out to purchase korbanos. That money was used to buy the daily korbanos, the daily morning korban and the daily afternoon korban. So every day, a person would have to go in there and collect some money. There were certain halachos. The Mishnah tells us that this person who goes in there to take the money out, let's say he needs two shkalim to buy what did they bring? I guess a sheep. So they would need two shkalim. Right? So they would have to bring two shkalim. He'd have to go in there and he'd have to grab four coins. So they told him that you're not allowed to have cuffs, you're not allowed to have pockets. You can't have cuffs on your sleeves, and you can't have a hat, and you have to make sure your mouth is empty. And they talked even about maybe having him make sure that he puts water in his mouth as he goes in. Why would they make him go through this, to jump through hoops just to go inside the room to take out two shkalim? Because they were worried that people might think that if this person a month later becomes very wealthy, they'll say, you know how he became wealthy? He used to go into the room in the Beis HaMikdash full of money. He must have been filling his pockets with it, and that's how he became wealthy. So the Mishnah tells us, you see from there that a person needs to make sure that he is clean in the eyes of people, not only in the eyes of Hashem. Hashem knows what he'll be doing in there. But he also needs to be clean in the eyes of people, that he needs to make sure he has no pockets, he has no cuffs, there's no way anybody will suspect that he took any money besides for the money that he walked out with in his hand that would then be used to purchase the korban, the animal for the korban. So the Mishnah tells us from these psukim, v'yisem nikim be'inei May Hashem umi Yisrael, that you should be clean from Hashem and from Yisrael. You had a question, Yoshua?
No, I was just saying that, you know, I think sometimes you have this idea of Marasayan, like a Takana Marasayan, and then like the what we call the Shad or even the Kiyam.
Yeah.
Right, you know, so I think.
There are two separate things, but we're not going to get into the details of the differences. Yeah, we're going to leave them as one general category of people suspecting either A, that I'm doing something wrong, or B, that what I'm doing is okay, and therefore they can follow and do the same. Right, we'll refer to both of them as Marasayan.
So, Rabbi, how far does it extend? I mean, obviously, you know, I've got a client lunch in 2 weeks at a trick restaurant. I walk in there, one of them going in there to eat. But I've had firm parties in hotels, which are cocktail receptions. As you go in, I could be going in there to eat, I could be going to the hotel to swim, I could be going to the hotel to rob the hotel, do anything on any number of things there. So how far does it go to, you know, oh, this is what he's doing when he goes in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of places where trace is available
right.
that I may or may not be eating.
Right, right. So that's a good question. We'll see. It's a good question, something to keep in mind. And that's a question, right? How do you define what are we worried about people take? How far do we have to take it? Right, if I go to the supermarket, or am I worried that people will see me in the wrong aisle? They'll think, you know, I happen to be looking at the cheeses, so they think I'm buying a tray of cheese.
Coming up for my neighbor, whatever
right.
it is.
Right. So, right. So that's a good question. Where do you draw the line? Right. And, but yeah, there's always something that we can get ourselves into trouble with if we go into somewhere. Yeah.
I guess I assume it's also market specific. In a place like New York, where there are a million Jews running around, it's understandable that you have a Marie Dine issue. But if you're going to, if you happen to, you know, meet a client in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
What's
okay.
The
okay.
You?
Hold that thought. Also, we'll get to that. Also, we'll get to that. Also, it might be better here in
right.
New York, but we'll see. We'll see. Just one other point of introduction: the Chassam Sofer, who is Rav Moshe Sofer, who lived in the late 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, in Frankfurt and Pressburg. He's a Rav in Pressburg. So he writes that there are two obligations in that pasuk in the Torah: of Yisem Nikiyim Hashem Umi Yisrael. You have to be clean from Hashem and clean from Yisrael. There are two obligations from Hashem and from Yisrael. He says that the second one, of being clean from Yisrael, is much harder. Being clean from Hashem, so that's what we're taught. Do your best, worry about yourself, do the right thing, don't worry what everybody else is thinking. Right? It doesn't matter. It's between you and God. Right? And that's V'yisem Nikiyim Me Hashem. But V'yisem Nikiyim Me Yisrael, to be clean in the eyes of others, he says, is a little bit more difficult. Because there can be people who can concoct some stories and suspicions about what you're doing, so you have to be very careful about what is done. Now, there's always going to be somebody who takes it further than reality. That I don't think you'll have to be concerned about, and we'll see. And we'll see after we get through it. We can then come back to the questions. And he says that not only is it harder, but the sin might be even greater, because if you sin to God, so we know we have different punishments for different sins that we do to God. But when we sin in the eyes of man, so that's a chilul Hashem. And the chilul Hashem might be the worst possible sin that we can commit. We know in the Gemara and Yuma, the Mishnayos and Yuma discuss how to attain atonement for different sins. And it discusses some sins you have to bring a korban, some sins you get lashes, some sins, if they're very terrible, then you have to be killed by Beis Din, and some sins Yom Kippur can forgive you alone. And then some sins you need to pass away, only then can you attain kapara. For Chil Hashem, it seems to be the most stringent and the most the strongest sin that a person can commit is the sin of Chilul Hashem, because that's not only between him and Hashem, that's also between everybody else, what everybody else is thinking. And therefore, to be unclean, not nucky in the eyes of man, so that leads to a Chilul Hashem. That's what Chassam Sofer says, just as a way of instruction. Question?
The commandment of Marasayim, that would apply only to Jews. So how does that reconcile with Chilul Hashem? Are we still talking about Marasayim or Chilul Hashem?
Chilul Hashem can be in the eyes of Jews, it can be in the eyes of non-Jews.
I thought it was really non-Jews,
Chilul
Hashem.
It could be either way. I think a person can create a Chilul Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
Without getting into anything specific, I think we could all... unfortunately, there have been some events that are not... not the diamonds in our crowns that all of us sometimes, you know, that people can say, even Jews can look at these events and say to ourselves, but you know, that's not a positive way to make everybody look, and to some degree that's a Chilul Hashem, you know, certainly in the eyes of the world, but I think
I think also technically, I think often the more classical thing of Chilul Hashem is in front of 10 Jews. In other words, like for example, I think if what Har Goliyavah is something to Chilul Hashem, and even other things can become Har Goliyavah. And there, I think in other words, 10 Goyim, Goyim wouldn't count. There, it's, I think specifically
right.
Jews. In other
right.
words, somehow that you're weakening. You know, look, if someone else is doing this, then I could do. You know, it's not. It
right.
weakens the resolve. Of,
right. Yeah, I think Chilul Hashem will apply across the board. Okay, now, so good. So now we understand that you can't do something that looks usher in public, right? That everybody's going to see you. Let's forget about restaurants moments for the moment. We'll come back to that. Let's first talk a little bit more, broad. So we understand you can't do something that looks like a sin in public. What about in private, right? What about in private? Can I sneak in and do something? Let's say going into the restaurant would be a problem in Mar Sinai. Can I sneak in the back door? Then the only people who will see me in there, you know, they don't know. They won't know that I'm Jewish, not Jewish, kosher, not kosher. Right? Maybe they won't know. So can I sneak in the back door? Or any situation like that. So there are a number of Gemaras. There are four different Gemaras, really three different Gemaras, that discuss the issue of Mar Sinai. The first one is the Gemara in Moed Katan. The Gemara in Moed Katan says that on Chol HaMoed, we know that there are certain restrictions as to what a person is allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, the work that a person should do on Chol HaMoed. You can work, you can do something if it's Letzorech HaMoed, for the needs of Chol HaMoed. You can do it if it's a Dabar HaAved, something that the person is going to lose his job or lose money because of not working on Chol HaMoed. There are certain things that we're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. But let's say, but in general, Chol HaMoed is, Kishmo Kenu, as its name so it is, it's a chol, but at the same time it's moed. It's chol, it's a weekday, but at the same time it has an aspect of moed, of yom tov. So chol moed is a little bit of a confusing time, but it's, let's assume that there is a rabbinic prohibition of doing work which is not for the needs of moed, which is not also something that a person will cause a person great loss not to do. So the Mishnah discusses in Moed Katan about making a coffin on Chol HaMoed. The person passes away, so the Mishnah says you can do all of the needs for a mace on Chol HaMoed, but there is an opinion that says that you should not, if you can make the coffin as long as you have the pieces of wood already cut from the trees. As long as you have prepared 4, 5, 6, whatever, however many pieces of wood that you will need to create a coffin, you would be allowed to put it together on Chol HaMoed. Then the second opinion says, no, you can even cut the trees, smooth the wood, and do everything you need to, bitsina, in privacy. Right? Besoch beso. In your house, you'd be allowed to do it. Outside, you wouldn't be allowed to do it, but inside, you'd be allowed to do it. The reason why you wouldn't be allowed to do it outside is because people will think that you're cutting wood, and they don't know why you're doing it. And therefore, it's Maris Ayin, they'll think you're doing something wrong. But the Gemara says, if you do it inside, in secret, out of the way, then you'd be allowed to cut the wood, shave it down, sand it down, and make it ready to become a coffin.
Unless that's your profession.
Unless that's your profession. Yeah, if it's your profession, then, and you assume that it's a Dabar HaAved, something which is necessary, yeah. But let's assume it's not, and you're just doing it out of the goodness of your heart, or because maybe has shown a family member needs it, or something like that. So, if that that would be so that's a situation where the Gemara says that you can't do it in public, but you would be able to do it in private. Which sounds like there's a difference between in public and in private, which at first glance would make sense, that there would be a distinction between doing something in public, where I have to worry about what people will say when they see me, as opposed to doing in private, where I assume nobody will see me. Right? That's what we'll assume. In private, nobody should see me, and therefore it should be okay. The second Gemara is the Gemara in Ksuvis. The Gemara in Ksuvis writes that if you have gutters on your house, and the gutters on your house become clogged on, I don't know if it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, on Shabbos, and the gutters become clogged. And if the gutters are clogged, then we all know, unfortunately, or if we don't know, we've heard about what happens when your gutters are clogged, and we don't live in a place that lacks situations of where the rain can then come inside to your basement, or back then when the roofs weren't so good, it would just come onto the roof and take the whole roof down. So it was certainly a situation where they wanted to prevent any type of the result of having clogged gutters. So the Gemara says that if you have gutters and Shabbos, somehow all the leaves fell into the gutters on Shabbos, and now the gutters aren't working on Shabbos, you'd be allowed to go up onto your roof and use your feet to unclog the gutters, bitsina, in private. And you can do it in a hidden way. You can go up onto your roof and unclog your gutters, bitsina, in private, and you don't have to worry. Why not? Now, you wouldn't be able to do it regularly because that's misakin, you're fixing, right? So it's a situation of fixing. If you were to go up there and stick your hand in and do the normal way to remove all of the blockage in the gutter, so that would be a problem of misakin. You're fixing this item, this gutter, because it wasn't a working gutter, so now you can use it, now it works. So that would be misakin. But here, it's misakin kil achar yad. Here, you're doing it in an abnormal way. You're using your foot to kick out the leaves instead of using your hand. And because it's a situation of loss, because if you don't do this, then the water will get into your basement, the water will come through your roof. Therefore, the rabbis never made the prohibition of doing this with in a backhanded way if it's in a situation of loss. But aren't people going to see you, right? People are going to see you doing this. They're going to think you're doing something wrong. So you see from here again, it's a situation of bitzina in private, and the Gemara is allowing us to do this, even though only in private. Why only in private? Because if it's in public, then people might see me, they'll think I'm doing something wrong, and this is a problem of marasayim. These two Gemaras seem to say that if it's long as it's in private, there you don't have to worry about what people might think, because I would say, because nobody's there to see you. So you don't have to worry about what people think if it's in private, because nobody's there. If it's in public, then you have to worry about what people will think. They think that you're cleaning out your gutters in the normal way. They think that it's prohibited. They won't know that it's a situation of great loss. Fill in the blank of what people will think, but if it's in private, you're allowed to do it.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
It's impossible to climb on your roof and clean out your gutters in private. And so if you're out in the
yes.
world, everyone can see you. Unless they're saying that unless your house happens to be
on
a particularly solitary street, you're not allowed to do it, but that can't be what they're saying.
Or you're living in the middle of nowhere with
right.
no neighbors.
Right. So this like a riddle, or we're just going to can't do it.
Hidden way.
Right,
you do in the backyard.
Facing a stream, and the front is on a street.
If your gutter's on in the backyard,
somebody you climb on the roof. It's raining. Everybody's indoors.
Right.
No,
maybe do it at night. Maybe do it when it's not nobody's out.
But if you go outside, then your neighbors also doing the same thing.
Right.
Same idea.
Right. Wear a big bush costume.
Yeah. All right. Well. Let's assume that it's possible.
Not George,
but the plan. Doing it at night. Nobody sees it. They didn't have lights back then. But, it was a different...
quiet area, right?
Yeah. Or maybe the gutters came down a little bit, so, you know, I don't know exactly how their gutter system worked, but maybe the gutters were, you know, when they were coming down, the runners were blocked up, so it was only those they had to kick at. You didn't have to go up on the roof. Use your imagination. now we have then there's a Mishnah, and this is really the last case, one of the last cases. The Mishnah says, let's say a person gets wet on Shabbos. He's walking, he falls into a river. This is the case that many explain. He falls into a river on his way home, and now he comes home and his clothing is all wet. So the Mishnah says that you're allowed to, when you get to the first courtyard, you'd be allowed to change your clothing, take your clothing off, and to lay it out in the sun. Right? It's not raining out. It's just you happen to fall into a river on your way home, or into a pool, or into a puddle, and so you can lay out your clothing in the sun, but not keneged ha'am, but not in a place in the courtyard that people walking by will see it. Don't hang it over the wall of the courtyard that people will see. The person who's here, his clothing was wet, and now he's hanging it out in the sun to dry it. Do it in the back of the courtyard, on the floor of the courtyard where nobody will see walking by because there's a wall here. Why not? So the reason why not is because if people see that you're hanging out clothing on Shabbos, they're going to think that you washed it on Shabbos. And you're not allowed to wash clothing on Shabbos. That's the Torah prohibition. To wash clothing on Shabbos in water, that's melabin, which is one of the 39 melachos of cleaning something with water. So if they see you hanging clothing out on your clothesline on Shabbos, then we're concerned that people will think that it's not crazy to think that somebody washed the clothing on Shabbos. They'll think that you violated a Torah prohibition, and therefore they say don't hang it out to dry in front of the people on Shabbos, but you can hang it out where nobody will see you. Where nobody will see you, you can. It says that you can in the chutzner, but not keneged ha'am.
Something that Mar is saying is I'm not understanding the whole concept of Mar. It basically assumes that someone's going to see you, a fellow Jew, and we have to assume that there's a lot of ignorance of halacha going on for that to take place. Because let's say he sees me doing something that would be Mechal Shabbos, laying out my clothes on Shabbos.
Yeah.
So he's going to see me. He's going to, first of all, assume that I don't know the halakha, that I shouldn't be doing what I'm supposed to be doing. He's not going to be dumb and kapsut, so he's not going to assume that I know what I'm doing, and he's going to ignore that.
Right.
And then he's going to ignore the fact that if he sees being me Michal Shabbos, he's supposed to warn me and let me know that I'm doing something wrong. Because if he did that, I would explain, no, I'm not doing something wrong, I'm doing what's okay on Shabbos.
Right.
So why are all these things ignored?
Well, first of all, it's too late.
Why is it too late?
Because you already washed your clothing. If you already washed your clothing.
Warn me. Don't do that for next time.
Mm-hmm.
Or get out of that restaurant in the real example.
Mm-hmm.
So why is all that ignored in the real world?
Because
I don't think we have
because
it.
Well, we don't have because I would say because in the real world,
mm-hmm.
Not everybody judges everybody favorably.
Right.
That's why we need to be told to judge everybody favorably in the Mishnah,
mm-hmm.
and not everybody goes over to somebody who they see doing something that might be questionable to tell them that by the way, I'm sure you'll take this the right way. Don't do this in that way next time.
So why do I have to if he's not going to be done with Hasidut? And he's not going to go under his
obligation. Why do I have to care what he thinks?
Yeah, right. I'm doing what I know is right.
Right.
I know I'm doing something okay.
Right. Because the Torah tells us that we need to try to be clean in the eyes of man also. And man isn't always
I am
thinking,
being clean. I'm following halacha.
Well,
it can be misinterpreted.
Right.
But I'm following halacha.
Right.
So I have to worry about every misinterpretation out there.
Well, so that's a good question. How far do you have to take it? Yes. A likely misinterpretation? Yes. A likely misinterpretation such as that I have a soaking wet suit on a sunny day hanging in my courtyard on Shabbos, not so crazy to think. How did that thing get so wet? There's not a drop in the sky, not a cloud in the sky. And you have a dripping wet outfit here? It must be you washed it on Shabbos.
Okay.
But that's not crazy.
No, it's not crazy. But if I see you walking to McDonald's, the likely interpretation is that you're not there for a Big Mac.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Fine.
After you go to the bathroom.
Okay, right. So that's a good point. But that's a different point. Meaning that's a different point about whether there are other options that are normal and accepted that everybody knows people do. But Marasayan means when there's reason to suspect that this is what happened. Right? There's a reason, if I see somebody shaving down wood on Chol HaMoed, my first thought won't be, he must be building a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If I see somebody, cleaning out his gutters, or looking up to make sure that it's all clean, and there's a pile of leaves next to him, I'm not going to think, oh, it must be that his gutters backed up and he used
why?
The back of his foot.
Why wouldn't you?
I would think that he
if
used
I,
his hand.
If I know halakha, I would assume that he's following halakha.
Well, who said everyone knows this halakha?
Right. Not everybody knows, first of all. Second of all, not everybody is as virtuous as you.
That's just reality.
You're right. Everybody should. Right? Marzani should be it shouldn't
non-issue.
Apply.
Yeah.
It should, everybody should
if
be down the front.
Marzani is assuming the worst about everyone.
Not everyone, and not the worst. But just, people are...
judgmental, we have to worry
suspicious
about
and judgmental, yeah.
But
if anything, I would say it has more of a... It's closer to reality than...
It depends on the reality. It depends on the reality of the time. No.
I wish you were right.
Among the Jews that I know, the ones I work with specifically, not in town, obviously, but the Jews I work with, the Jews that I grew up with, the most religious ones, all right, whatever that means. If they see me doing something... they could reasonably assume, oh, then that must be the right thing. They see me going into a McDonald's. They see me flipping lights on off a job. They see me cleaning out a gutter with my feet, or whatever it means. So they assume, oh, so it must be okay to clean out my gutter on Shabbos. It must be the right thing to do. Now,
and you happen to be using your feet, and then they'll use their hands.
My feet, they don't understand why I'm using my feet. They think I'm crazy. I'm
you don't
want to
make your hands dirty.
They don't know. But so that would be a reasonable assumption. So it's not just them assuming the worst. It's also people misinterpreting what the law is based on your, the way that you're...
Right, people who are ignorant of halacha.
Right, they're ignorant. They're not following halacha anyway.
No, that's not true. They're trying to.
Not
his case specifically.
Sure.
But there are plenty. There are people who are well-meaning people who don't know all of the halachos. They know somebody they respect and they know or they view as the most religious guy they know, and who for certainly is not doing anything wrong because in their eyes, he's doing everything right. If he does something which they do, right, they do it because they're ignorant to halacha. They don't know halacha. Or they don't really care so much. And they see it, they say, oh, that must be okay to do. And then they'll go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They might be doing it anyway. But now they'll go and do it and they'll say, oh, I saw him do it. It's fine. Right? And not in a malicious way. Not because they think he's doing something wrong. They think he's doing something right.
But there's so many things that we do nowadays that can be misinterpreted if you don't know halakha. Everything from the Shabbos clock,
that's
the
true.
Counting on Shabbos.
Now, Shabbos, that's true. And they're all situations of Maariv Zayin. And they're all situations of Maariv Zayin. I think I mentioned it in one of the previous shiur when we were doing all the electricity shiur. I heard from a rabbi who was older than I, who told me that when the institution of Shabbos clocks came about, when they saw somebody's light on Friday night and they walked by the apartment the next day and saw the light was off, they thought the family was Michal Shabbos.
And that's what I meant by the reality changes.
You're
right.
You're right. But at that time, you should not have been using a Shabbos clock because people didn't know about it. People weren't familiar with it. It wasn't something that was common in every single Jewish household in the world. But now it is. So now, if you see my light on during at night and off the next day, you don't think anything of it.
It's going to get more common unless more people start using
right.
it.
That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
That's well, you're right. And, yeah. Don't be the first one to jump into the scalding hot bath. but you're right. Realities change, and people's perception changes as well. But at a time when it hasn't yet changed, that could be a problem. That's, you know, when we spoke in the last 2 weeks ago, when we spoke about that kosher switch. So, you know, that is one of the potential issues. If somebody sees me walk over to a light switch and turn it on or off, you know, at this moment in time, in 2012, they'll say, "What are you doing, turning on a light or turning off a light on Shabbos?" Now, in, you know, 2012, you know, a person might say, "Oh, can you get that kosher switch?" Right? Maybe. And maybe not.
But in Eric's case, all these people who are walking by the house, who are not Shomer Shabbos to whatever degree, and they see a light going on, and they don't know about Shabbos clock.
I don't know. Everybody knows about time clock.
If everybody knows
they tell them in Home Depot everywhere. Nobody knows about
them.
They don't think about it. They wouldn't have a big job
with them. I work for this company. All of the timers in the world are made fourth quarter. They're all made for the holidays.
Uh-huh.
So you can have your Christmas lights turn on at night automatically. That's for all the production.
So they all know about time clock.
Yeah,
exactly.
They know that they use the other 6 months of the year.
Okay. You're right. It's a good question. It's a good question of where do you put the perception of people and who are we worried about? Right. It's a very good question. It's a question that we see the poskim struggle with as time goes on. I just saw this tshuva. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach has a tshuva about synthetic leather shoes on Tisha B'Av and Yom Kippur. And he says in there that there is this new thing called the fake leather that they make, it looks just like leather. And he says that you can't wear them on Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av because people won't know that you're wearing fake leather shoes. Now, nowadays, I think there are others who say that nowadays it's so common. Everybody knows there's synthetic leather. Everybody, if they saw you wearing something that looked like leather shoes on Tisha B'Av or Yom Kippur, they'll say, "Oh, you're wearing synthetic leather shoes. Nice. You know, they look more comfortable than what I'm wearing." Right? So, times change.
This may be a digression, but if you're going to acknowledge that times change and halakha change is based on changing times, then we can take that, say, let's jump with, like Kipnius, you know?
Get him.
Well, no, you're right. It's true.
I mean, you can't have it both ways. You know,
the Torah is a living Torah. The Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us is a Torah of Chaim. It's a living Torah that is expected that, and we have examples of this in the Gemara where Hashem says, "Lo b'shamayim hi." The Torah was given to the Jewish people, and we then decide exactly how it adapts. Everything that comes up, all of these situations, all of these new technology that we're talking about, they all are dealt with, right? We spoke about the kosher switch. We talk about everything in technology. Somehow we find it how it's spoken about and dealt with in the Torah. Now, but yes, the halachas are changing, and certain halachas are changing. That where the Torah put in the room for the halachas to change, so the rabbis can change and adapt that to the times and to the situations. But that doesn't mean that we have the liberty to change everything, right? So I think that only the Gedolei Hador. It's only up to the people who are the foremost experts in Kol HaTorah Kula, in all of Halacha. They're the only ones who would be able to say, this can change, but this can't change. This can change, this can't change. Right? By looking, you know, a little bit of the Torah, you can't possibly then say, well, this should change because I think it should change. But who am I to say that the Halacha can change? And, you know, the Halacha change, by Halacha changing, it's, you know, it's the application of halachas to certain situations that change over time. Here, for example, we're talking about Maris Ayin. So Maris Ayin, the halacha is not changing. It's the perception of man that changes, which causes the halacha to change. Right? Synthetic leather was never really usur to wear on Yom Kippur. Right? Even Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, when he wrote his tshuva, it doesn't mean that it's usur to wear synthetic leather shoes on Yom Kippur. It's usur because people might think that that's leather. And once the perception changes, now the halachic application changes to that. Kidneyus is, you know, there are rabbis in Israel who are trying to change kidneyus. But, you know, it's not.
It's more of an acknowledgement of the fact that kidneyus, you know, really never was chametz, and maybe shouldn't have been designated as being usur in Pesach.
Well, I mean, there's a reason for the minhag.
The reasons for it being usur now don't apply.
That's not even so clear. We do have some situations still. Certain kidneyus, that's true. But some kidneyus, we still have situations where you can find wheat kernels that are mixed up in these other ones. You know, certain quinoa, even some of the kashrus organizations recommended Pesach times.
But
that's the reason for the whole reason for kidneyus was that they might become mixed up with the other ones, either in what they look like or that you may have some wheat mixed into these kidneyus. Mm-hmm. So we do still find when they're in the same factories that you could still have that type of a situation. But you're right, you know, it's a question, which is why there are rabbis in Israel who are trying to do away with it. But, you know, it's not so easy to just do away with a minhag that exists in Klal Yisrael for a very long time.
Yep.
You know, that's part of the... yeah.
If you have a Maris Ayin situation, such as going into a non-kosher restaurant...
Yeah, is that what we're talking about?
And someone sees you, and let's say you specifically explain to that person that you're going in to buy a soda to
eat. Actually, 2 weeks or 4 weeks. I remember that.
If you explain your motive for going in there, that's for a legitimate purpose,
yeah.
Does that eliminate the Maris Ayin problem, or does Maris Ayin still apply based on my action, regardless if I convey the information?
No, if you were somehow be able to convey the information to any possible onlooker.
People would be more than nine. I'm walking in, and you're not working, you're not being great business people.
Yeah. No, no, no. Yes. Yes. If it's obvious, if it's fairly obvious, and which we'll get to, if it's fairly obvious that the reason why you're there is for, you know, case specific, then yeah, that would alleviate the Maris Ayin problem. Yes, which is why some say, I don't want to ruin the end, but which is the reason why some say that you can go into these business meetings at non-kosher restaurants, because it is something or Soloveitchik. Shechter said this, Herschel Shechter, heard from him, I thought he said in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that he thought that nowadays, even his time, but certainly nowadays, that in the New York area, where it's so common to have a business meeting in a non-kosher restaurant, that it would be less of a problem, or not a problem, because everybody would know that you're going in there not to eat, you're walking in with a briefcase and a folder or a laptop or something, that you're going in there with a group of people sitting around this big table, you know, that you're there for a business meeting and not for lunch, which wouldn't mean that there's then no Maris Ayin. If it's obvious to everybody why you're going in there, now, could you argue that it's not obvious to everybody? Yeah, you could argue that. But if it's fairly reasonable for most people who see you going in there with your yarmulke on to, I don't know, a steakhouse, which is known to be not kosher, so then, yeah, many people will say, well, I know why he's going in there. He's going in there because he must have a business meeting. Look, he's got his briefcase, and he's got his, you know, he's dressed in his suit and his tie. He must have a business meeting there. Or he's tricking us. Yeah. Okay, we'll get to the yarmulke. We'll talk about that. Or did you take your yarmulke off or on? Not tonight. We're not going to get to it. I thought we'd get to it. Right after Maris Ayin. That was my first topic after Maris Ayin.
Well, probably the best thing to do is to strive, because we're in the New York area, if you can, if you have the opportunity, to make it a kosher place.
For sure.
Eliminate the whole
for sure.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes, right. Sometimes you can if you're calling the meeting.
Right.
But
yeah.
If exactly. You're invited to a meeting.
Right.
But you're right. Of course. It's and someplace, yeah. Even I would imagine.
I've had kosher food brought into a non-kosher.
Right.
Place.
So yeah, that we'll talk about too. Right. That type of situation
yeah.
We'll talk
about
too. Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah. We'll talk about that too.
And that tape that you can never cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too. How to take a scissors in.
I cannot cut that tape either.
Yeah. The worst.
5 hours of cooking in your plastic.
Everyone's sitting there eating, looking at you.
Did they? Do a good job.
Yo, you can just have
the bread. Okay,
we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the bread. We'll talk about the sushi. We'll talk about the drinks. We'll talk about it.
The salad, the fish, the sushi.
We'll get to it. Sometimes. So yes, Ariel, yes. If you can, if it can be at a kosher restaurant, certainly it's better. Because also then you could eat. And it's better.
Right, like my group at work was going to a place somewhere in Roslyn.
So, right. So, and if they respect that, you know,
right.
But that's not everybody has such easygoing and.
Right.
And also, like downtown Manhattan, it's like not a single nice
especially
restaurant. Not
close down.
Nothing. Well, yeah. Even that wasn't a sit down. It wasn't like, you know, if you have a real, thing. But there's no.
We'll try going to Suffolk County.
Yeah.
That's where my
holiday bar is. Anyway, yes. So, yes. If you can go to a kosher restaurant, yes.
That's where they decide
better. Better. Because then, everything's better.
Nothing.
The question is if you can. Okay, so that's. So, back to the Gemaras. So, we have the Gemara about the making the coffin. We have the Gemara about the gutters. We have the Gemara about the wet clothing on a sunny day, hanging it out to dry. All of those cases say that you can do it as long as nobody sees you doing it. The problem is that we have a statement that the Gemara mentions in a few places, one specifically here, about the wet clothing hanging it out, is that we have a rule in the name of Rav, that any place that the rabbi says that you can't do something because of Maris Ayin, it's usher even b'chadrei chadarim, meaning even in inside room of an inside room. In your house, in the back inside room in your basement, where certainly nobody will see you, if it's forbidden because it's Maris Ayin, you can't do it even in private. And that's what the Gemara says. And the Gemara then quotes another case similar to that, or proof for that, that the Mishnah, the Gemara says, that if you're taking your animal, if you're walking with your animal on Shabbos, you shouldn't, you can't walk with it, or it's a machlokas, whether you can walk, you can't walk with your animal on Shabbos wearing his bell, cow, with its bell, because it looks like you're going to sell it in the shuk. But you can walk, if it's in your courtyard, and it's in private, then you can. Gemara says, what do you mean if it's in private, then you can? We have this rule that anything which is forbidden because of Maris Ayin, you can't even do in private. Gemara says, yeah, but that's a big machlokas, and therefore we have all these Gemaras that some say yes, some say no. The question is, how do you put all these Gemaras together? Right, which one do we follow? Right, why? How come only in some of the Gemaras does the Gemara all of a sudden jump up and say, oh, by the way, we have this rule that if you can't do it because of Maris Ayin, you can't do it even in private. The reason why you wouldn't be able to do it even in private, I think, would be that that we're worried that if you're allowed to do something in private, you may then come to do it in public. Mm-hmm. Right? So the rabbi said, you know what, let's make it simple. If you can't do it in public, you can't do it in private. Right? Now, the problem with that is that doesn't seem to be, that's not consistent in all of these Gemaras. It doesn't say that when it's talking about the gutters. It doesn't say that when it's talking about the coffin. It only says that when it's talking about, let's keep it simple, it only says that in the case of where you have this wet clothing hanging out to dry. That's the only place that the Gemara jumps up and says, hey, if it's usher because of Maris Ayin in public, it's usher because of Maris Ayin also in private. What's the difference? So there are three differences. We're not going to get into all three of them. I'll give you the simplest one. The simplest one is that there's a difference between whether the action that people will think that you did is a Torah prohibition or whether it's a rabbinic prohibition. To wash your clothing in water on Shabbos is a Torah prohibition. So if people see you hanging out your wet outfit to dry on a dry, sunny day, they're going to think that you violated a Torah prohibition of washing your clothing on Shabbos. But if they see you cleaning out your gutter with your foot, or they see you building a coffin on Chol HaMoed, both of those are only rabbinic prohibitions. and therefore it would only be prohibited to do because of Maris Ayin in public, where people will see you. But in private, the rabbis didn't say that an action that people might think that you're doing is a rabbinic prohibition, that it's forbidden even in private. Right? It's only if they're going to think you're doing something usur, which is midoraisa, which is from the Torah, only then do they say you can't even do it in a hidden place, even inside. But when it's only rabbinic, when it's a Torah prohibition, then they said, don't hang your clothing out to dry in front of the people. You can do it in private, the first opinion. The second opinion says, no, you can't even do it in private because people will think that you violated a Torah prohibition of washing your clothing. Mm-hmm. And that's Tosus's approach. That seems to be the approach that we follow. That if people will think that you're doing something which is Torah prohibited from the Torah, then you can't even do it in private. If people will think that you're doing something which is prohibited according to the rabbis, then you can't do it in public, but you would be able to do it in private. Okay? Now, if you apply that to our case of the non-kosher restaurant, I don't think it matters. Because if you're going into a non-kosher restaurant, people think you're eating treif, so they have treif, which is from the Torah there also. Right. Which means that even if you can sneak in the back door, it wouldn't be allowed.
Right, but all these examples that we're quoting from the Gemara, they're all when someone sees you doing an action already.
Yeah.
They see you cleaning the gutter, they see you laying out the clothes. Being in the restaurant is, how is that over on a Torah prohibition? If they saw me eating a piece of steak, that's a Torah prohibition. But we're worried about them actually seeing me in the restaurant. Why am I not allowed to be in the restaurant? Is there a Torah prohibition to be in a place where they serve non-kosher food?
No, isn't the implication the way that they don't see you washing your clothes?
Yeah, no, they see me washing my clothes.
No, they
see me laying out my clothes.
Right. Laying out the clothes is the same thing as walking into the restaurant.
I don't think so.
You didn't actually wash the clothes, you're laying out the clothes.
They see you sitting there with a napkin on your lap.
You're
sitting at the table.
I'm not eating anything yet.
Nobody. Right.
But
okay.
But
you're saying it's before as opposed to post.
I'm not doing anything.
Okay.
I'm not even calling anything.
I hear. I was thinking like Eric also they don't see you washing your clothing. They see you hanging out to dry. They don't even see you hanging out to dry. They see it. They see the clothing hanging out to dry. They don't see you doing anything.
Right. But the only assumption you can have from there is that they were wet at some point, meaning
right.
I washed them.
And here you're saying maybe people will think that I'm sitting there.
I'm sitting there.
For company.
Or for a glass of water.
For a glass of water.
Yeah.
Yeah, the analogy would be where you're actually paying the bill.
Right. Or eating the food.
You're paying the bill, you must have eaten.
Or giving the waiter your plate.
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
okay.
Well, no, but that leads to the question.
You don't know.
But I'm asking you,
pretty close.
Maybe is there an usher to being in
a No. There's nothing usher about sitting in a place where they sell non-kosher food, otherwise
you
wouldn't be able to go to the supermarket.
Well, freshly prepared food might be different.
They have a deli counter at the
front.
Maybe
you're not allowed to be by the deli counter.
But I want my dried fruit. Whatever they sell over there in that corner.
And don't be holding a number.
Which number is it? No. I don't think... there's no prohibition of being in a place where they sell even ready-made or freshly prepared non-kosher food. But I think it's comparable. I think it's close. But okay. Now there is plenty more I wanted to say about Mar Zion. I'll just let you know, there is a Ramah. The Ramah discusses par of milk, chalav shkedim, almond milk. And the Ramah discusses whether you're allowed to drink your almond milk with meat. The Ramah in Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah of Moshe Israelis lived in 1525 and passed away in 1572 in Krakow, Poland. So the Ramah writes that you're allowed to drink your almond milk with chicken, but not with meat. But if it's with meat, you're allowed if you put almonds on the table. Right? So there's a lot there in that one line of the Ramah, right? In those two statements. You can drink the almond milk, which is obviously parv, with, right, which is the equivalent of like non-dairy
milk.
Creamer, basically, soy milk. You can drink it with chicken.
Rabbinic.
Let's assume that, which is rabbinic, right? But you can drink it with meat, which is, let's assume, from the Torah. But if you're drinking it with meat, you can, as long as you have almonds there on the table, next to the milk, right? Or the pitcher says almond milk on it, or the picture of an almond, right? Something like that. So there are two parts of the statement which are very interesting. First of all, the Rama makes no indication as to whether you're in public or in private. right? He makes no indication whether you're in public or in private, and still says that if the worst thing people will suspect is a rabbinic violation, a rabbinic prohibition of chicken and milk, then it's allowed. Right? A simple reading of the Rama. That's the first implication. Right? The simple reading of the Rama is that if at worst what they'll suspect is a rabbinic violation of the Torah, that it's mutter. You don't have to worry about marasai. If somebody's seeing me drinking milk with my chicken, they'll think I'm eating milk and chicken, or they'll think, oh, that must be almond milk, right? And the Rama says that this is mutter. But to have it with meat would be usur, unless there are almonds on the table, which means that if there is an obvious heker, something which is obviously making a point to show people that this is not milk, right? And it's on the table, or it's on the bottle that says almond milk, parv, it says, you know, a big picture of an almond on it. So then that would also be okay, even if they would suspect that I'm doing something which is usur from the Torah, meaning drinking it with actual meat.
But that implies it's in public, not in private.
Well, so maybe. So first, there's a big, this Rama is big, big discussion about this Rama. Because how could the Rama say that Maris Ayin doesn't apply to if people will suspect that I'm doing something which is rabbinically prohibited? Right? Two of the cases in the Gemara, the gutters and the coffin, were both rabbinic prohibitions. And the Gemara says that you can do them in private, but you can't do them in public because of Maris Ayin. So how could the Rama possibly say that you can drink this almond milk with chicken in public, maybe, in public, because it's only an Isser Midrabbanan, it's only a rabbinic violation? How can he say that? That's against explicit Gemara. Which is why the Shach, who is Reb Shabsi Cohen, who lived in the 17th century, who actually married the great-granddaughter of the Rama, of Rav Moshe Isserles, he says that I disagree, and it can't be. Maris Ayin does apply to rabbinic prohibitions, just as it applies to Torah prohibitions. But obviously the question is, what's the Rama talking about? So there are a number of answers. The simplest answer is that the Rama is talking about in private. Right? That the Rama is talking about on your table at home. Now, if you're on your table at home and your family's there, so then we're talking about in private. And we said that there's a distinction made in the Gemara, according to Tosos, there's a distinction made in the Gemara as to whether people will suspect that you're violating something which is from the Torah, then you can't do it even in private. But if people will suspect only that you're violating something which is midrabbanan from the rabbis, then you can do it in private. If that's the case, if that's what the Rama is talking about, and that's why he allows the almond milk with chicken. That's the most plausible, which is important to note. And then, so now we'll leave the rest of it out. So, lamaisa, right? Halacha lamaisa, getting to the applying all of this to going into a non-kosher restaurant for a business meeting. So, it's not in private, right? Because you're going in, it's a public place, there's plenty of other people there. So it's hard to say that this would be private. But even if it's not private, there are reasons to be lenient. One, as I mentioned before, from the name of Rav Soloveitchik, I believe it was in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that if something is so common, then, like, somebody was saying before, maybe Ariel was saying it before, he wanted credit for it, if somebody sees a Jewish person going into McDonald's, let's say on a rest stop, right, on the highway at a rest stop, they see them going into McDonald's, they're not going to think they're going in there to get a cheeseburger. They'll think he must be tired, or he needs a bathroom, or he's going to get a drink, or he's going to use the bathroom. So if it's something which is so commonly done, and accepted that this is what people do, then it basically alleviates the problem of Maris Ayin. So if it's so common that people have business meetings in non-kosher restaurants, which I think that it is, certainly in New York City, in the New York area, it's something which is known. So a person goes in with his yarmulke on, holding his briefcase, so people will say, he's not going in there for lunch. He's going in. You go in with a group of people, they see you sitting at the table with everybody with their computers out making presentations. They know that you're there for business purposes. Now, if that being the case, then there is no problem of marasayin. Might you have one person walk by and say, oh my goodness, how could this Jew be sitting at this table in a non-kosher restaurant? Maybe. But it doesn't seem like we're worried about the one random person who might take it to an unreasonable expectation. If it's a reasonable expectation that people can understand and assume that you're going in there for a business meeting, a business presentation, then that would not be a problem of marasayin. Two other reasons why it would be okay. One is if you walk in, you know, as I said, with a briefcase, some type of a heker, because as we said, the Rama writes that you can drink your almond milk even if you're having a hamburger, as long as it's obvious that it's almond milk. Like if it says almond milk on the bottle, which means that if there is some type of sign that this is, you know, like Evan was saying with the sign, telling people, I'm in here for a business meeting. I don't think you can do that. But I think there are ways that people see, if they see you sitting in there, they'll know that it's a business meeting, or they'll know that it's a party, you know, an office party or something. They'll see, they know the back room is used for these parties, and that's where you're sitting with this whole group of people, and you walk in with your briefcase and your computer. They know that you're there for either for the presentation, or if you're walking with everybody else and going straight to the back room, they know you're there for the party. So that also, I think, can be taken into consideration based on that statement of the Rama. And the last one is that B'makom Pseda, as we see from the situation of the gutters, that the rabbis did not make their gezeira, they didn't make their rabbinic decree apply in a situation of loss. So if it's a situation where a person says, I have to go to this lunch, I have to go to this meeting, or I'm going to lose my job, or I'm going to lose the business, then that's a situation of makom pseda. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about stopping in a non-kosher restaurant to get a drink, and this is going back, or, you know, some time, 60 years, 70 years in New York, where it wasn't as common for people to stop in at these 60 years to stop in these stores to get drinks. And even then he said, but if a person is so uncomfortable or b'makom tzar, that he's so hungry or so thirsty that he needs something, this is the only place to go, that you'd be allowed to go in and get a drink. Right? Which means that if it's a situation of need or a situation of loss, then there's more room to be lenient with a rabbinic decree, because we have situations where the rabbis didn't make their decree apply to a situation of great loss. One, in specifically in the context of marasayin, the situation of the gutter, where the Gemara says that since it's in a backwards way, kalachar yad, because you're doing it in an unnatural way, using your foot and not your hand, and because it's the makom seda, because it's in a situation of loss, that if you don't clear out your gutters, you're going to have a terrible leak, then in that situation, the rabbis didn't make their decree of Maris Ayin in that situation, therefore it would be allowed. So any of those three, or because we have all of those three reasons to be lenient, there is certainly room to be lenient in situations of going into the non-kosher restaurants for business meetings. And the question is just whether you can eat anything there. And if yes, drink, eat anything there. That we'll have to talk about in the weeks to come.
What about just going in to hang out with your coworkers? They're all going out for lunch. You're just going to hang out with them. And there's no meeting there.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's doing that. Is there maybe some social aspect to be part of the group and not be outsider? Maybe that influences your mm-hmm. position in the company. Maybe not.
Mm-hmm.
Just
meeting.
No, but you're not that much.
Depends on the business. Depends on the business.
I
work for Fortune 100 company.
Okay.
And a big part of what you do is you build relationships with people.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to do what Shmuel was just talking about is to go and be there and build those relationships, and if you're not there, it takes you out of the possibility of promotions,
mm-hmm.
it takes out of the possibility of bonding with people that
mm-hmm.
are networked,
mm-hmm.
Meeting with customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I go to dinners all the time, and I sit there. It's
mm-hmm.
a very awkward situation,
mm-hmm.
because what can I eat?
Right, come back.
and if you don't, like, you know, proverbial break bread with people,
mm-hmm.
there's a sense of why is that person not
right. So yeah, I think in situations where it could lead to loss, or you know that there is more room to be lenient. Meaning, if any of these reasons would apply, that there's some type of you know obvious distinction, or if it's a situation of loss where you are worried about not going to this could be detrimental to your job, growth in your company or your job, or if it's a situation where it's obvious to people that you're going there because you know that's what people do, then there would be less of or no problem of Maris Ayin in those types of situations. Yeah, and I think every situation would have to be, you know, dealt with specifically. I don't think that would be able to. That I don't think you can give a blanket answer to those types of situations. I think each one, you'd have to take each one and try to figure out the circumstances and the exact details of the situation and to decide, to make a judgment call as to whether this is one of these three reasons could apply to allow me to go, whether it's a situation of loss, or whether it's a situation of where it's obvious to people, or whether it's a situation where I can make some type of distinction that I'm there only for the social aspect. And if that's the case, then you know there wouldn't be a problem with Maris Ayin. But you know, I think as they get more and more specific, the situation of a business lunch, a business meeting in the middle of the day, and where it's clear, so then you know, that's the easiest one. Where it gets more common and frequent, and I guess more laid back, those are probably a little bit more difficult or gray areas to deal with. But that doesn't mean that makes it usher. That means that each one, I think, would have to be taken case by case. But certainly there'd be room. Sounds like there would be room to be lenient in those types of situations. Yeah?
So if the issue of Maris Ayin either rating or lessened depending on the reliability of the hashkafa, like if there's a place
yeah.
where the hashkafa is like really sketchy.
Good question.
And going into this place.
Yes, it's a very good question. So, yes. Yes. I think it might actually make it might be worse. Going to a place with a bad hashgacha might be worse. Because there, I think more people will think that, will assume that it's good. Right, not that. It's more likely that if I'm going to a non-kosher restaurant, fine. I'm going to a non-kosher restaurant. If I'm going to a restaurant where it claims to be kosher, or according to some it's kosher, or we're not sure about the reliability of the hechsher, so then I think that could be even more difficult of a situation. And sometimes those come up because they're trying to be accommodating to you. And they say, oh, I know that you keep kosher, we're going to, whatever, fill in the blank,
yeah.
You know. And that makes it even harder.
Right.
And I think that also would have to, you know, would have to be asked as a specific situational case to your local Orthodox rabbi when that type of situation comes up. But yeah, I would... what? Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's a very good question. Yeah, Stacey, it's a good question. It's I was going to mention that. I think it's on my next page. But that distinction a place with a hashgacha that people rely on, other people don't, would be even more problematic, I think, than less problematic, unfortunately. But again, that doesn't mean, you know, across the board. Again, I think it would depend on the situation. Yeah. That's the question. Okay? Good. Stay tuned.